Welcome to The Books We Love, a podcast of the Troy Public Library. Today, it's just Amanda and me, Olivia, and we are going to do a special little episode, a new series. We are going to feature a different children's book illustrator for each episode. And today we are talking about
Virginia Lee Burton.
Virginia Lee Burton, Virginia. Who I knew. What did you know about her before we started?
I knew her because my mom used to read us The Little House all the time when I was a kid. It was one of the first books I read on my own. And I love it so much. And it's one of those books I still read. I have a copy. I have the copy I grew up with. And I read it to all my nieces and nephews. I love it so much.
I think I didn't know anything about her. When I looked her up and I saw the covers of her books, I recognized them from years of shelving in the youth room and stuff like that, and just knowing children's books. But I didn't know anything about her. And I think this new series, which was Amanda's idea, is going to be amazing, because I think it's like, there are so many authors and illustrators for children's books that when you're a kid, you don't really think of the author at all. You're just like, oh, Corduroy just came fully formed and is probably real. You don't think about the person who created it. I mean, and then when you grow up.
Corduroy is real. He lives in a department store and he's still somewhere looking for that button.
That button has got to be somewhere, you know, 60 years.
That darn button.
So I think it's going to be really great to learn a little bit about these people who created these really important books that influence so many people. And so I'm really excited. So, Amanda, you're going to start by talking about her biography, right?
I am going to do her biography, talk a little bit about her, the books that she wrote and illustrated, and also mention the books that she just illustrated, and maybe mention why I sort of think she's still around, why her books are still being read, if that's okay with you.
I'm excited.
And then you will go into some of the artwork she did in later life, right, Olivia?
Yep. Awesome. Got my coffee. I'm ready to listen.
So her biography information I'm going to share is specifically from the Norman Rockwell Museum's, has a really great shoot-off website called Illustration History. Fantastic page on her. So some background information. Virginia Lee Burton was born in 1909 in Newton Center, Massachusetts, to an engineer named Alfred and a poet and artist named Dalkeith Yates. I thought that's a heck of a name.
Mm-hmm.
In 1920, the family moved to Carmel by the Sea in California. In 25, Burton's parents were divorced. And then following high school, Virginia studied dance in San Francisco. She wanted to be a dancer, but her dad actually fell and broke, I believe, his leg and his foot. And that illness was the catalyst for her moving back home to take care of her dad. Her dad was now living in Massachusetts again. So while she was in Massachusetts, she decided to start studying drawing, because drawing had also been one of her passions besides dance. She gets a job as a sketcher for the Boston Transcript. I just thought, what a cool job title. What do you do? I'm a sketcher.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the sneakers, obviously. That'd be weird if people thought you were a shoe.
Or what if they thought you were sketchy?
Oh.
Like for a living.
That would be, what's your job title? Sketchier.
Sketchier. Sketch. We'll workshop
sketch.
It.
Sketch. You could just do sketch.
Yeah.
Maybe. So... While enrolled in a drawing class in 1930 at the Boston Museum School, she met and married her professor, George Demetrios. They had two sons. Burton started writing children's books as a way to entertain her sons and their friends, and tested the stories and drawings on them and to get feedback to see how the storyline worked, if they liked the drawings. Always good to go to kids for your audience, right?
I think that's so smart. I always wondered if children's writers did that, if they had like a little panel of children just reading.
You would
it.
Be smart too, because kids are truly your hardest critic, because you know, kids don't always care if they hurt your feelings. They're just so honest, and it's not always meant in a mean way. They just give it to you like full on.
And I think sometimes they wouldn't even think of it as offensive, like maybe because they don't really see the connection between like the creator and the. So they would just be like, this doesn't make sense, or this is boring.
This is dumb.
Yeah, this is my experience. This is dumb.
So never give up, because Virginia Lee Burton's first story that she attempted to publish was declined 13 times. I also want to point out, I think I've said it before on the podcast, the original Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone that we all love, that was declined by like something crazy, like 30 times before someone picked it up. So don't ever give up if you believe in an idea.
Yeah, believe in your stuff.
She actually did not keep that idea. Unless she changed it into another story. I didn't see that. It had a different name than any of her books. So she must have scrapped that idea after 13 rejections. So while she continued to work on her writing, she started just doing artwork for other authors. Her first major artwork in a children's book was a book called Sad-Faced Boy by Arna Bontemps. And so Bontemps was the writer. Virginia Lee Burton illustrated that book. Then her writing career kind of took off with her debut children's book, Choo Choo, Story of the Little Engine That Ran Away.
That's the one I think
I think it's got a red cover with the old school Choo Choo train on it.
Yes. What's the one? Is there like a Mike?
Mike Mulligan and
Mike
his steam
Mulligan
shovel.
Mulligan and the steam shovel. That's the one I recognized. Yeah.
Yes, that I would say probably is her most well-known. So Virginia Lee Burton went on to author. So the first one was Choo Choo in 1937. Then it was Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel in 1939. Calico the Wonder Horse in 1941. The Little House in 1942, which won her the 1943 Caldecott Medal for the Best Picture Book. Katie and the Big Snow was 1943, so she was going boom, boom, boom in the beginning. Then kind of took a little break. Her next book was Maybelle the Cable Car in 1952, and her final book was Life Story in 1962. There's a really interesting New York Times article about that called Life Story, Virginia Lee Burton's Picture Book for the Ages. That book is supposed to be extremely profound because it talks about like sort of the dawn of time up until what was present day, probably when she was writing this in 1960-61, and looking at the creation of animals, how time has changed our planet. Whoa. So they said it sort of has all these large themes that obviously children question, but that you as an adult might find interesting. And they said the artwork's beautiful. We don't own it. I ordered it, so I'm excited to see what it looks like. I'll show you when it comes in. She illustrated Sad Faced Boy, as I said, her first book. Well, the first book that she was attached to as an illustrator. She illustrated Fast Sooner Hound, Don Coyote, The Song of Robin Hood, and The Emperor's New Clothes. Those were some of the other projects she worked on with authors. In her later life, she went on to work with the Folly Cove Designers, a group of craftswomen who produced designs cut into linoleum blocks, which were then printed usually on fabric. I think Olivia is going to talk more about that later, so I'm going to let that lie. 1968, she died pretty young at the age of 59. Yeah. So as to her books, the best way to describe them was I took from that New Yorker article, which I already mentioned, The Life Story, Virginia Lee Burton's Picture Books for the Ages by Sarah Larson. Larson said, much of Burton's work concerned nature in the passing of time, the sub-themes of industrialization and urbanization.
Mm.
So I asked myself as I was doing this research, thinking about why I like the books as a kid, why I still like them as an adult. And I said, why are her books still relevant in 2024? Obviously, kids don't understand urbanization or industrialization or those big themes that we have words for, right? But I'm thinking of the Little House book in particular. It was my favorite back in the early 80s. So it feels contemporary because it does have these themes of growth and development and how the world sort of changes around this little house, and the spirit of the little house stays the same. But I think as a kid, it was cool to me to watch the world build up around this house. It's the story of this little house that's built in the country, and then literally a city evolves around it.
Oh, okay.
And it made me think of, there was a house, I think it was in New York City. This woman was in her 80s, and she refused to sell it.
I love those stories.
And they literally built skyscrapers around her.
Oh,
and then there was this
that.
Tiny little house. It kind of made me think of, isn't that sort of the storyline in Up?
Up, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it's like that storyline of Up, of the little house. You see the world develop and grow up around it. Not going to tell you how it ends, but it's a beautiful, beautiful story. And I also love the illustrations because you watch the little house is as much a part of the family as the kids.
Mm.
And she's sort of like this third parent. So when the kids are outside playing, the little windows look like eyes, and she's always watching as the seasons change and the kids play, and she watches the kids grow up. It's just the sweetest freaking story ever. Her illustrations are so beautiful, and they're so of their time. I also think that kids love Virginia Lee Burton's anthropomorphizing of characters, right? In Katie and the Big Snow, Katie is the snowplow.
Okay.
In Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel, the steam shovel is Mary Ann, and these things are always a central character. They're involved. It plays into the kids' ideas and imaginations of maybe things do have personalities. Maybe things around us do take on a life and control their actions as much as we hope they do.
Yeah.
It kind of made me think of Toy Story, right? We all want to believe that things happen in the nursery. Yeah. That I used to think that when I went to bed as a kid, that my stuffed animals got up and probably played together. And I think as a kid too, I sort of suspected the same thing with things when I was asleep. The trucks probably did stuff at night. The trains probably did something. I think that's also why Thomas the Tank Engine was so big.
Totally.
The tank engines all have personalities and characters, right?
Yes.
So I think giving life to inanimate objects plays into kids' imaginations. I also think that kids just like rooting for her characters. In Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel, they have to get this job done, right? So they're working together. And Katie in the Big Snow, she's got to push all that snow out of the way.
Sure.
And there's always this concern they're not going to get it done. So you want to root for her characters.
Well, I want to say, I think you're absolutely right about the anthropomorphizing things.
Yeah.
I did that for sure when I was a kid. It was comforting because I could imagine all of these inanimate objects as being friendly personalities all mm-hmm. around me, kind of like looking out for you.
Yeah.
It also deeply disturbed me when I was a kid too. So maybe there's a little thrill in that. Like we've talked about the Brave Little Toaster before mm-hmm. and the sort of traumatic experience of watching it.
The 80s and 90s.
Yeah, when you're like throwing out objects. But I don't think, maybe it's just like a natural human thing to see personalities in inanimate objects. Mm-hmm. And we probably do it when we're older too. It's just kids are more likely to admit to it.
Yeah.
When we're older, it's like, oh, that's too whimsical.
I also think that's why animal books are really popular.
Definitely.
Like Charlotte's Web, where they have their own world and their own conversations and their own dramas. Like, Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. I always think about like all these concerns that animals have that you don't know about. You just see them eating in a meadow and it's like there's this whole drama in their life.
Maybe it's a really good thing to have that because mm-hmm. I think if we like see our humanity in inanimate things or in animals, we're less likely to treat them badly because mm-hmm. we give them this like kind and we get invested in their mm-hmm. well-being and maybe we'll be less likely to like throw things out willy-nilly mm-hmm. if we see. I mean, I know toasters don't actually have personalities.
What?
Well,
I've got my concerns.
Yeah, well.
No, but I think you're right. I think you're right that giving things personality, it hopefully makes us take better care of them, right?
Right. Take better care, less apt to destroy it if we see mm-hmm. ourselves in it, that sort of thing. That's a great analysis. I didn't know we would get so literary with these.
I know. Unintentionally,
but also I think it's very good because I think part of the point is to lift these people up because there's mm-hmm. this idea in literary world that children's authors are like sort of silly and sidelined.
Well, it's like, I don't think we always appreciate how difficult it is to write books for kids and any books, but books for kids, they're a tough audience. And to not only, unlike adult books where generally they don't feature a lot of pictures, you're not only was she crafting this story to make that kids fell in love with, but she made beautiful illustrations. If you don't even want to read her books after this, I highly encourage you at least come and check them out. We have The Little House, we have Choo Choo, and we have Mike Mulligan and the Steam Shovel, and we have Katie and the Big Snow. We mm-hmm. have those four. I have them all checked out. Her artwork is so beautiful. And if you spend a lot of time looking at artwork over the years, it's interesting to see how things change.
Yeah.
Her style looks very much of the 40s and 50s from my experience of looking at kids' books from the decades. And it is just it was a good time for illustration, in my humble opinion. And The Little House, the colors are so Beautiful. Her. I think it's watercolors.
Oh my gosh. I've been doing a lot of watercolors lately.
Mm-hmm. I want to see them.
Yeah. Gloriousness. I'm really so proud of them. They're not that good. But
I think her stuff is drawings with watercolors on some of the pages, and it's so pretty.
Okay.
And so highly recommend anyone to come and check them out. The other books that we mentioned that we don't carry, I ordered all of her other books through Mel, and I ordered all of the books that she illustrated but did not write through Mel as well. They had all of them except for one. So I'm excited to see her artwork and the books that she did not write but just illustrated as well. But I'm going to let you take it away because I've been talking way too much, Olivia.
Well, no, this is the perfect segue because we were talking about her art and her style, and that's what I did a little bit of research on. So she was really known for doing everything in the children's book world. Some writers would write, and then they would have an illustrator come in, and then they'd have somebody do the spacing and the layout and all of that. She did everything completely on her own. And her style, so you talked about the Folly Cove designers. This was a group that she founded. It was a textile collective that she founded in 1941. It was a group of mostly women, mostly completely untrained in any kind of art. They just got together every month and shared this screen printing. Like you said, they would carve out a stamp essentially, mm-hmm. and then stamp fabric, and then they would share it with each other about once a month, and they would just critique and share ideas. And Virginia Lee would, is that her name, Virginia Lee?
I think Lee's her middle name, but they always say her name all together. So maybe her full name is Virginia Lee. Let's just go with, Ginny. She went by Ginny a lot.
All right, well, Ginny would.
Sounds like we know her really well now.
It's a little familiar.
Virginia
would actually teach the women. So she would come up with these classes, and mm-hmm. she would teach them how to do all these things. And they were very successful. They had their artwork in a lot of fancy museums. They sold them, the textiles, to a number of companies. So that went until the year that she died. So 1938 to 1969. Mm-hmm. And pretty much the year she died, they disbanded. Kind of. Yeah, they
such
didn't.
Such a bummer.
Well, they just didn't feel like, you know, they didn't want to keep selling their work when she was the one who had taught them how to do it. So they donated all of the art that they had to the Cape Ann Museum. Mm-hmm. So you can look that up. There's a great article on the Cape Ann Museum about the group and about the collective.
Yeah, I read that too.
It was good. And I liked one of the quotes they said is, participants were urged by Virginia to look at their surroundings for inspiration, to draw, quote, what they knew, and to sketch their subjects over and over again until they made them their own, which I thought, like I said, I've been sort of trying to do some visual art just kind of for fun, even though I'm a terrible visual artist. I've mm-hmm. never been good at it. You don't have to be formally trained if you want to try mm-hmm. art. Just do it and
create things in life that make you happy.
Yeah, whatever you want, even if they're they don't have to be important or
even if it's leftover ketchup on your plate and you're
beautiful what you just
you take
made.
Your fork and you put the tines through to make a cool little sunset looking thing. That's whatever brings you joy in life, right?
I love that.
As long as it doesn't hurt others, do it.
Yeah, just do it. And start an art collective. I think that's a great idea.
I think it's cool as hell.
I know.
When I was
love
reading
that.
About that, I'm like, I want to start a writer's collective.
Let's
where
do it.
We're getting together in 30 years and talking about how Blue Blue Blee Blee from our group got published, and yep. look at how good yeah. we all feel having supported each other.
You don't have to be formally trained or credentialed or anything like that. They did talk about how the collective was really inspired by the arts and crafts movement mm-hmm. of the 19th century, which I knew nothing about. I know that there's an exhibit in the DIA that has a lot of arts and crafts stuff in there, but I never really knew what it was, so I looked it up. It was a movement that started in the British Isles in the 19th century. It's decorative and fine arts. Arts and crafts doesn't have a specific kind of style. It's more like a philosophy around art. Mm-hmm. Some think it was the British version of what would later be called Art Nouveau in French art. Some say it's in direct contrast to Art Nouveau. So that's a little art tension that's going on there, a little bit of debate.
Okay.
But think Frank Lloyd Wright. When it spread to America, Frank Lloyd Wright was someone who sort of epitomized the ideals of the arts and crafts movement. Working with nature, simplistic forms, mm-hmm. handcrafted designs, and it was created as a reaction against machine-produced art and industrialization. So they really valued handmade, mm-hmm. pre-capitalist art. So it's not something that you're just churning out and selling a bunch of stuff, which makes me think of that little house, mm-hmm. this idea of, you know, small, simple, working with the natural world mm-hmm. kind of art. So they really wanted to emphasize nature and simplicity of form.
That is an excellent, excellent summary.
Oh, thank you.
Seriously, you did your homework, friend.
Oh, thanks. It was really interesting to learn about it. And now I want to go to the DIA. And usually I skip that room because it's not very flashy, because it's very simple. And
yeah, but I'll now go I'm with interested. You.
Yeah, we'll go
Speaking
see.
Of the DIA, for you non-Michiganders, that's the Detroit Institute of Arts. It was just voted the best museum in the United States. Did you know that? Best art museum in the United States.
Well.
Pretty cool.
I'm not surprised. It is
a really nice museum. My favorite thing in the DIA is when you first walk in and go into the, not into the part where that you enter, but the next big room after that, Diego Rivera.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Did murals up on the top of the wall, sort of just underneath the ceiling all the way around. And it's like his story of industrialization, speaking of industrialization. So it shows sort of the birth of the car industry, which obviously Detroit makes sense.
Do you know that there's only one completed car in the entire mural and it's very hard to find? When we go, you can look for it and I'll tell you where to find it if you can't find it. My art friend told me that.
Do you know who he was married to?
Yeah.
Frida Kahlo.
Yeah, I like
A lot
her.
Of people don't know that. And really? I'm like, artists, man, they stick together.
They sure do.
Before we wrap it up, I just wanted to mention those things for anyone that wants to read or research a little bit more about Virginia Lee Burton. Definitely check out all the books that we mentioned. If you would like to read more about Virginia Lee Burton, check out the book Virginia Lee Burton, A Life in Art by Barbara Elliman. Or there is a DVD called Virginia Lee Burton, A Sense of Place. TPL does not own either of these, either the DVD or the book. However, with your Troy Library card or ordering through your home library, you can use MEL, which is the Michigan e-library. You can borrow books from all over the state. They deliver them to your home library, and it's free of charge as long as you return it on time and don't accrue fines. Both of those are available through MEL, so put a hold on them. Just did. So I'm going to be learning all the things about Virginia Lee Burton in March.
It.
So also wanted to mention, I know at the beginning we said this is going to be a new series where we cover children's illustrators, artists. A lot of them are authors as well. This is not replacing the normal podcast.
Just
so,
a little fun seasoning
just a little
on the
fun
meat of the podcast.
Seasoning. I like that. So don't feel like if this was not your cup of tea and you don't really care about authors and illustrators, this is not replacing our normal discussions about all things books and media. So don't give up on us if this was not your cup of tea.
And if it was, which I'm hoping it was, because I was fascinated by this. But if you were likewise fascinated and you would like us to cover another author, illustrator, just shoot us an email at podcast@troypl.org. We love getting emails.
I'm excited to discuss who our next artist is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
We should probably rotate into a dude. We'll talk.
We'll see. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Enjoy the spring.
Thank you for listening to The Books We Loved, a podcast through the Troy Public Library. You can find more information about the books and library services we mentioned in the show on our website at troypl.org/podcast. If you would like to suggest a topic for future discussion, please email us at podcast@troypl.org. Thank you for listening and happy reading.